another episode of Pursuit of Perfectness, the podcast where your friends, two average Joes, Ellen Matthews, which is me,
and Dennis Pacheco, which is me,
which is him, two hosts with the most, we discuss perfectionism, how it manifests in ourselves, in our lives, in our culture, and we talk to guests on this show. It's an interview podcast, and we talk to all sorts of people. And Dennis, who are we talking to today?
Today, Ellen, we are talking to very interesting, fascinating, I almost said young man, but how condescending is that? It's very condescending. Individual by the name of Luis Enrique Sandoval del Prado, who I had the pleasure of meeting in an improv class that I taught. And I thought, wow, this guy is so interesting. He's a science writer and a scientist. And I don't know a lot of those people. I know a lot of actors.
Same.
Yeah. I thought, man, this guy would be great on the pod. And I was right. Turns out, well, I'm not going to spoil it for you. Is he a perfectionist? Maybe.
I don't know. Is he a perfectionist scientist? We don't know. Is he a chill scientist?
You'll have to listen.
We'll have to listen. I loved this. And so if you've listened to our episodes, this is a very different type of guest with a very different background. And we're trying to explore all different types of people with different careers and backgrounds so that we can see perfectionism in all areas. So this was super fun. And I learned some science, Dennis.
Yeah. Oh, and you got to show off some of your science knowledge, which really impressed me.
I pulled out my freshman year biology textbook. I mean, I didn't pull it out. I pulled it out in my brain.
Yeah.
And I got to say, I held my own, I think.
I think you did great.
I do say so myself.
Yeah. And so we had a great conversation with Luis. Stick around. We did a real fun quiz at the end, BuzzFeed style. Mm-hmm. You'll get to take that quiz about plants and see how well you do.
Yeah. We also talk about all sorts of stuff. We talk about cloning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even going to say anything more. Just listen. Oh my God. Keep listening.
Just keep listening. Folks,
just keep listening.
So without further ado, we've talked enough. Here's our conversation with Luis Enrique Sandoval del Prado. I'd like you to meet our guest, Luis, who was a student in a class that I taught. And it was actually one of my first classes I taught, right? You were in maybe my first class I taught solo, I think. Yeah, is that right?
Can I talk? Is that?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh,
okay, yeah. Sorry, talking is like a big thing when I do interviews. So, yeah, I think I remember you said that I was in your first solo class because you had like a shadow class before, like someone was shadowing you. But then this was like your first like solo ride, and which I thought went well. But
yeah, I thought it went well too.
I mean, I kept going, so.
Yeah, that was a very successful class. It was a good class. It was a fun class, a bunch of people who liked having fun, which is great. Sometimes you get a bunch of people who don't like fun, and then it's a bad class.
Uh-oh, they're in the wrong place.
You're in the wrong place.
You're in the wrong place.
They're all like, uh-oh, this is fun. I don't like it. And they leave. I'm just kidding. Those people don't come to the magnet.
And Luis, what's so interesting about you is like we interview a lot of people who have connections through Magna on the show. So improvisers and a lot of like creative types. And what's interesting about you is that you are a creative type, but you also have this other side of you, very science and math oriented, which is a background that we just don't get to talk to a lot. So I'm so excited to talk to you about not just the creative side, which I want to hear about, but also that side. So you're a writer for Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory in New York. And you write about research and scientists at the Research Institute. You have a PhD in molecular genetics and genomics. Genomics?
Yeah, genomics. Yes.
Genomics. Got it right the first time.
Yeah, you're right.
From Washington University in St. Louis, where you studied the genetics of virus infection. Very timely. Very timely. But you also love theater, improv, Hans Zimmer, being a nerd, making people laugh, fraps, and helping others. I mean, what a combo. What a combo. I love to see it. Tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of how did you discover these two seemingly very different parts to you, the math and science part and then this creative part?
You know, when I was growing up, I was always kind of, always liked to help others, right? That was like something I don't know where I picked it up from, some TV show or something, movie or my parents, but I always like to help people. And I mean, one of the ways I found that I was really good at helping people was by teaching people stuff that I just learned about. And so I always kind of had this like teaching character, personality. And I would always, you know, try and teach people things that I learned about in my classes. Once I got to college and, you know, I was getting into these like science classes. I actually majored in forensic science in college because I was kind of into the whole like CSI.
Oh, very cool.
I was super hot when I was going into college. So I was like, everybody wanted to do that. And so I was, you know, I majored in that and, you know, I wanted to put bad guys away with science, basically.
Ooh, yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Put bad guys away with science.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I hate bad guys and I'm good at science. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to use my science. I'm going to use my nerd for good.
That's like justice. That's like what superheroes do.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. And then I fell in love with the science part. Like, I really liked kind of like, I don't know what it was, but I liked nerding out with all my fellow nerds on the, like, the bio, the DNA, the mitochondria, all these things. Yeah. I don't know what it was about it, but I liked that scene, I guess. And so then I was like, you know what, I might want to explore this more. So then that's how I ended up in grad school, pursuing this PhD in genetics. And part of the reason why I had a choice because, I mean, I had interned at a crime lab in college.
Ooh, wow.
Which was super cool. And, you know, I met all these real-life crime scene investigators.
CSI.
Yeah, I met the real CSIs who were all just like a bunch of hipster nerds that were into true crime who were in the mid-30s.
Oh, my goodness.
It was great.
Wow.
But yeah, it was awesome. And I had fun. So I had two choices: either go, you know, continue the crime. I had the training, the education to do the crime scene, the criminalistics path, but also kind of really liked. I was more curious about this like biology track. Hmm. So I went into that, and also part of the reason that I went into that is because I wouldn't mind becoming a teacher because I love teaching. I'd be a professor and I could just teach everyone. Yeah. I could teach so many people, right? Rather than just like my friends, my family. Yeah. So I went to grad school and then towards the end of my PhD, I started to get involved in this podcast called Gradcast. My friends were in it and told me about it. And I was like, wow, could I like join you guys? And they're like, yeah, we need more people. So yeah, it just gave me a little taste of doing something creative at school.
Right.
In that field.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. As opposed to maybe like writing papers or doing experiments. It was like, gave you a little bit more of a creative outlet. That's cool.
Yeah. And then around the same time, I got involved in, you know, the school had a musical theater program for students that you can just, and then basically it was open for everyone. I got involved in that, and then I got involved in improv, and also I started taking piano classes all around the same time. And so
you really dove deep into the creative. You're like, I'm doing it all.
I don't know what happened.
The podcast led to all that?
No, I think that it all happened around the same time. Like, I don't know what happened.
Got
I was
it.
Just like signing up for everything.
Mm. Yeah, that's so interesting.
Towards the end of my PhD, I kind of sat down and I was like, okay, now I have to choose again what path I want to go into. Mm-hmm. It's like college all over again. And I kind of started to think about what do I really like about what I'm doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What really got me up in the morning every day was talking to other scientists, like talking with scientists about their science.
Yes.
And that's what I found was really attractive to me. It was really, really what was, like, what was fun about science. What was fun about science was nerding out with other scientists about your science and about their science.
Right, right, right.
And then explaining it to people who aren't scientists?
That's right, yeah. And then it's almost like gossip. It's like science gossip.
I love it.
You get the dirt, or you get the, like, you know, what's hot right now in some person's field. And then you go and you tell everyone you possibly can about it. And so...
Did you hear the latest about plant RNA?
Exactly. That's, yeah.
Petri dish. That's
a scientist. Oh my god, now we have to have a scene about gossipy scientists.
Yeah, we don't normally do improv, but let's just
do scene. So hey, did you see the Rebecca lab got like bigger petri dishes? Like they're huge.
Do you all ever like, do you talk about like whose project gets funding? Does that like ever come up? Or is it more like, sorry, I'm stirring the pot?
No. I think that's more of a professor thing. Cause I think,
most students,
all their projects get funded.
Yeah.
Or they just have basic funding from the school. So we don't really have to worry about that.
Got it.
Although my project did get, my own project got this like crazy competitive grant. The National Science Foundation gave me $135,000 for my project.
Damn.
Yeah, it was like, I applied to this grant that basically almost everyone applies to. And I got it.
What was your project?
Basically, they gave me funding to study this new virus that my lab had discovered.
COVID-19, sorry.
Did you create COVID-19?
No.
You heard it here first.
Wow, yeah.
Wow, I knew it. Government lab. No, what was the actual
sorry,
virus?
Sorry, go ahead.
Worm virus. It infected worms.
Ew.
Yeah.
Gross. Sorry.
That really grossed you out.
Is it fun to talk to non-scientists?
Okay, you know, like I just want to say worms are definitely misunderstood, cute creatures. Okay?
Really?
At least the worms I worked with, cute? They were super cute. They were like wiggle around. They're like really tiny.
Aww.
And they're like just like wiggle around. Aww. And then like when you would feed them, they'd all like run towards the food, or like not one, I guess they'd wiggle towards the food, and
yes,
I guess they would slosh around the food.
Okay, thank you for painting that picture for me.
Yeah,
so it's worm like viruses that live on worms.
Well, that they infect worms and
they infect worms.
Yeah, they infect worms. Yeah, I guess you could cut a virus, a parasite, but I guess that's, I don't know, that's, that could be controversial. But yeah, so it infects worms. The reason that this virus is important is because it's not necessarily the virus itself. Like the virus is distantly related to polio or some of these viruses, but it's not actually polio. It's just, it's like a really far away cousin. But what's important is that it's the worm, actually. The worm, classic genetic system, this like model organism that geneticists have been studying for like years. And you can do a lot of great genetic experiments in these worms that you can't do in other animals like mice. So for example, if you want to do genetic experiments in mice, it takes years, months, because, you know, you do some kind of genetic modification and then you have to wait for the offspring, and then you have to wait for the offspring of the offspring, right? Because you have to let it.
Right.
You have to let these modifications cross. You have to cross these mice. But in worms, worms from babies to adults takes 3 days.
Oh my goodness.
I can do a genetic experiment in worms in over like 3 generations in like less than 2 weeks. Something like that.
Wow. So you're actually taking me back to my freshman year biology class. I'm getting all these memories. Do you also use fruit flies? I feel like I remember fruit flies being a quick species, a quick life cycle.
Yes. I mean, I guess you could say that's our competitor, but yeah, fruit flies.
It's your competitor.
Yeah. We, yeah, they both have similar advantages to studying those.
But
yeah.
you're not a fruit fly guy. You're a worm.
I'm a worm guy. Yeah, and worms are way cuter than fruit flies and less annoying.
Right? Am I right? Yeah.
It's just wow. I mean, every once in a while, you would get like a random fly in your like lab. And it's just annoying.
Yeah, they can fly around. Worms. That's so annoying. Worms are just gonna crawl.
Worms know how to chill out.
Exactly.
Yeah, they know how to chill.
They chill. They listen to you. You know, just
they listen to you.
Yeah, late at night. Yeah.
Worms understand language. That's the other thing about worms.
I'm gonna ask you another question from my freshman biology. I love that you are a PhD. And I'm pulling from my freshman year textbook. Do you use Punnett squares?
What's a Punnett square, Ellen?
Wait, you don't know what a Punnett square is, Dennis?
No, I didn't take biology in college. The last biology class I took was probably junior year of high school. Or maybe even sophomore year of high school.
Can I try to explain what a Punnett square is and then you can correct me?
Yeah, go for it.
So a Punnett square basically takes the genetic code. This is so wrong.
You're sweating.
From... This is so wrong. But basically, so say two fruit flies are mating, right? So the top of the square is the is the code from one fruit fly, and the vertical part is from the other fruit fly. And basically, like, all I remember is that there's dominant genes and recessive genes. So if you have like a, for instance, red hair is a recessive gene. So if you have red hair, it means that both your parents have the recessive gene for red hair, because both recessive genes have to come from both parents in order to show in you. Does that make sense? Okay, Luis, please clean that up. Please clean up that terrible explanation.
No, I think that was pretty solid. Really? Yeah, I give that a 10 out of 10 if that was on the
wow. midterm. A 10 out of 10?
Yeah, I feel like it passed. Can't be right. But also, I was a pretty chill TA though. So,
That sounds very chill. Yeah. I rambled a lot. Yeah, she said red hair. She gets it.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I did. I had to do a lot of Punnett squares, genetic crosses. If you start with this genetic mutation, where the hell is it going to end up? And how do you make sure that you end up with the right one? And like, what are your chances? In fact, there was like some crazy formula that I had to use. So I was making these mutations. So I was mutating my poor worms. So I had to mutate them. And then there was like some number of like, okay, if you want to introduce a mutation in every single gene in this worm a couple times, there was some like crazy like formula that you would use to calculate. Okay, how many worms do you have to mutate, and how many worms do you have to screen to get that number that you need? It gets pretty, I guess, advanced, technical.
Yeah. So there's a lot of math involved.
Yeah, there's a lot of math.
Yeah. So are you good at math? I guess you got to be, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. I mean, I never finished calc.
Yeah, you're not missing anything.
I did, I think, maybe one day of pre-calculus in high school. One day, I think. I failed pre-calculus in junior year, which I'd never failed a class before, ever. And then I took pre-calculus in summer school. I went to summer school for pre-calculus so I could bring that grade up. And then I took calculus senior year. I did it for one day. And I said, why am I doing this? I don't have to do this. Whatever math requirement a college I applied to has, they're going to be fine with what I've got already. So I stopped taking it.
I felt the same way in my Calc 2 class. I think maybe that's why I didn't take Calc 3, because I remember one of the problems was to be able to, like, there was like a picture of a water tower or something. And there was like a picture of a water tower, and they gave you some numbers, and they were like, figure out how much water fits in this water tower using calculus 2.
Using calculus 2.
I was like, I'd rather just like walk up. I'd rather just either call someone, or, you know, most jugs or bottles have numbers on the side that says it holds 50 gallons or whatever. So yeah. I'd rather buy binoculars and look for it.
Yeah. Or ask somebody who knows.
Yeah, just ask someone.
Or Google it.
Or guesstimate. It's like,
guesstimate. Kind of like,
yeah, it's like that.
I don't know if it's a paradox or something, but do you know that it's like, I forget what it's called, but if you're walking towards a wall and you're like, say you're 10 feet and then you close half the distance, you're 5 feet, and you close half the distance, you're 2.5 feet away. Technically, you will, what's the word I'm looking for?
You'll never reach.
Yeah. Technically, you'll never reach the wall. Not technically, whatever the word is. If you keep going half the distance, you'll never reach the wall. But in practical terms, you'll reach the wall. You'll be there.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? So therefore, science is, we don't need it. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, you heard it here. Dennis math is telling is a scientist to his face.
We don't need math. Science is useless.
We don't need. That is not true.
You can just Google stuff.
We were reading your body of work, the papers that you've published with your fellow scientists, and there's a lot of very important stuff there.
Oh, yeah. I want to be clear. This isn't one of those anti-science podcasts. I thought I was saying, I was like, this is clearly a joke. But now I'm thinking about it like, oh, people might believe that I really don't like science. No, that was a joke. Math is good. Science is good. Life is better because of science. We didn't bring you on here as like a takedown. Like, oh yeah, then how come, explain this. No, that's not what this is.
But seriously, do you believe the Earth is flat? Because we do.
We do, and we have charts.
we have some YouTube videos defending our point.
So I planned for this.
Uh-oh. It's going to take us down. Scientist takes down doofuses.
I have played a worm.
You have played a worm.
I will unequivocally prove why the Earth is not flat using this plate of worms.
And you're prepared for it.
Wow. You have to use calc too.
Whoa, the worms are spelling out with their bodies. The Earth is round. It's like Charlotte's Web.
Oh my God. That's amazing. So
that was amazing.
Luis,
so.
I want to.
Yeah, I wish we had video of the worms. Amazing. That was amazing.
Oh, that was amazing when they got together and spelled out the world is round. We also wanted to talk to you about perfectionism, because that's the subject of our show. And Dennis and I have talked at length about being very hard on ourselves and in our pursuits. Can you talk a little bit about your experience with perfectionism? Did it get in the way when you were, working on your PhD, or when you're writing these papers, or, these are pretty intense benchmarks. Do you, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I think that I've always been harder on myself. I don't know why, but I've always thought that no matter what I did, it wasn't always good enough. Not that it was like bad, right? Like, you know, if you get like an A on a test, I'd be like, all right, sweet. No, I got an A. But I could have gotten an A+, you know. So I always had kind of that mindset. When I started grad school, I started off great. I had a great start. I got some good results early on with my experiments. I made some nice progress. And then I got the like $135,000 grant, and things were looking pretty good. And then somewhere along the line, I started having issues with my experiments. I mean, experiments were just either not working, they were stalling. Basically, the experiments were, usually what happens is the experiments don't work for some reason, and you don't know why. And so you're basically you're trying to get like one, you're trying to figure out what went wrong, what the hell is happening, and you're trying to get this one experiment working because you can't do these other 10 experiments that you got to do until you have this one experiment first. And so that, like for me, that really was hard on me. I started to feel bad about myself. I started to feel like I was not good enough. You know, I was almost like confused. I was like, I don't understand. I made it all the way here. You know, I've always been good at math. I've always been good at science, top of my class. But for some reason, I'm losing steam here. And basically, it it really hurt my self-esteem. I started to feel bad about having a hard time doing these, about having a hard time in grad school, basically. And I started resenting, I started really being very negative about, I started being really hard on myself and negative. There's a lot of almost like resentment. I started to like hate myself for having such a hard time, for not being, you know, perfect, for not being mm-hmm. able to figure it out. And yeah, and you know, that really got in the way of my, you know, my studies, because it was almost paralyzing, right? I wouldn't want to go into lab because I was afraid mm-hmm. I was going to fail mm-hmm. again. I was afraid I wouldn't be able to figure it out, to get it done. I think I remember I started to go into lab less, and I was, you know, starting to be afraid of going. And that was pretty tough. That was really hard. And then, you know, that was kind of like a vicious circle, because then I would hate myself for not going to lab, right? And then that goes into, you know, then it's just, I would hate myself for hating myself. It was just, pretty bad. And so they get tough at times.
How'd you get out of that?
I'm not sure why, but I think I know what started it all. So basically, one day, one of my classmates in my PhD program, one of our friends was doing a musical at school. It was a musical show that the school produces every year, and it was Beauty and the Beast, right? And I love Beauty and the Beast, and so I told my friend. Yeah, I told my friend, I was like, hey, let's go watch this, you know, go support it.
Me too.
And so we went. And when I was watching, I was like, wow, this looks like so much fun. And then I turned to my friend. So my friend, his name is Omar. He was like my best friend in grad school. And he's like the kind of friend that you can suggest anything and he's down. Like, he'll just like do it. So I looked at him, I was like, let's do that next year. Let's sign up for next year. And he was, okay, done. And so I signed up for that. And then for some reason, I just kept going. And then I signed up for improv. I started taking improv classes. My friend had told me about someone in my lab had done the improv classes in St. Louis, this place called the Improv Shop. And he had done it. He told me about it. And so I just kind of randomly thought about it. I was like, I wonder if they're doing classes. And I just looked and I found it. And then I just signed up for that. And then I think I remember I also wanted to get back in touch with. So when I was young, I played trombone in middle school and high school. And, you know, I love music.
Oh, very cool.
I wanted to get back into it. And for some reason, one day I just went to a piano store and I bought a piano. And then it was a pretty sweet deal. They said, if you buy this piano from us, you get free lessons for life.
What?
I know, that's what I said. It was, you buy a piano from us, it doesn't matter how much it costs, you get free lessons forever. The classes alone is like enough for this. So basically I started to get more involved with a bunch of different like performing arts groups, just to do something that was completely different than what I was doing. I just wanted to do something that was completely different and that was fun. And I don't know why I thought piano was fun, but I thought piano was fun and improv, and actually I didn't know anything about improv.
Who does?
I had no idea what improv was. And then musical theater, I didn't even know. I was like terrified of singing, so I didn't know if I could sing. It seemed like a really supportive group, so I just signed in. But yeah, basically being part of these different communities, these different groups, it kind of gave me back my self-esteem. Hmm. And that really helped me, the confidence, to get back into lab and to try again and just keep going. And then eventually I ended up figuring it out. You know, my experiment started to work and then it was just kind of smooth sailing. I just needed to get over that like one period. It was just like a, It's kind of like a rut. I was like in a rut, a science rut.
Right.
Right. And I just kind of needed, I just needed to get out of it. But I, you know, I just kept getting deeper in this hole of like, just like self-doubt and stress and anxiety. And yeah, I just kind of needed a little push, a little lift. And basically playing part of these different communities really helped. These different groups gave me that push I needed.
Yeah.
That support really. And
yeah,
I guess morale really.
Mm. I love that.
They really gave me the morale I needed to pull myself out of that rut and then just get across the finish line.
So you just needed to just put that part of aside and not think about it, and then put your energy into something that was just bringing you joy and kind of no pressure, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I also think it's important to point out that improv makes science better, is my takeaway of the story.
Yeah, so you're welcome.
I'm just saying, we're giving the world a service. Okay? Yeah. We make scientists better at experiments, is what I heard.
Pursuit of Perfectness is a huge pro-science podcast.
Yes.
And that's a true thing.
You guys are public service. You guys are
thank you.
Doing
thank
good.
You. Thank you.
I love that you like took time to step away, right? And then when you came back, you were more refreshed and able to focus. And speaking of stepping away to refresh, I think it's a good time to take a break.
Yeah. That was a great segue.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
So why don't we take a quick break, and we'll come back with more Luis in a minute. And we're back.
We're back. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
We're going to drop in ads during those breaks eventually.
Eventually. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Capitalism.
Come on, capitalism.
Come on, capitalism.
Come through, baby. Yeah, I remember when we, after I think it was our last class, a bunch of people from the class went out for a drink after, and I found out that I didn't know until then that you were a scientist and a science writer. And I was like, whoa, let's talk about that. And you were like, really? And I was, yeah, dude, like everyone I know is like an actor and an improviser. Who cares? I'm bored. I'm bored. I don't want to hear about your stupid show. You suck and I hate improv.
No, but we've loved every single.
No, the shows aren't stupid. They're all brilliant from beginning to end.
He's teasing.
I'm teasing. And everyone's story about acting is, it's funny because when you go, I took a class, this is a small sidebar. I took a class in acting for commercials and they were like, oh, now they're going to ask you to say something interesting about yourself to the camera. Don't talk about acting or improv or anything like that. And I was, but that's the most interesting thing about me. And like now looking back, I'm like, oh yeah, they hear that. They don't want to hear that. That's
all the time. Right. Yeah.
So I have to make some shit up. My point is, so I was like, this guy, he's got interesting new things to say that I haven't heard before. And you do.
I mean.
So thank you.
I was surprised because I'm used to just being around PhDs, scientists right. all the time. And right. so, I mean, no one really gets excited. I mean. So yeah, I was just like, oh, this is nice. Someone's actually.
Well, you're in the perfect situation, Luis, because when you're with your scientist friends, you can just talk about improv and they'll be like, whoa, that's cool. And then when you're with improvisers, you can just be like, I'm a scientist. And they'll be like, whoa, that's cool. and then you're just super cool in both groups.
Yeah. And when you're with your improviser friends, you could also be like, I want to talk about improv. And they'll be like, yeah.
That's so true. I will never get sick about talking
about improv. I love talking about improv.
I've never thought about that. I guess you're right. Yeah, I have. There's two different lives, right? There's different.
You straddle two worlds, both of them flat as the earth.
Which is the official Pursuit of Perfectness dance.
Position of the Pursuit of Perfectness.
Luis, climate change. How big of a hoax is that?
Fake, right?
Let me check my worm.
Wait, the worms are spelling something.
What are the worms are spelling something out. The worms are spelling out, stop polluting Mother Earth. Okay, well,
wow.
Who knows what that means?
I don't know who's Mother.
Wow, that made no sense. Yeah, that made no sense.
Yeah, I think they're just hungry.
Well, I read some of your articles on Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory, and very reader friendly, very lay friendly. So,
thank you.
Very reader friendly.
That's like the number one rule is that it has to be reader friendly.
And
the titles are grabbers. Just to read a few: Pushing Past Pancreatic Tumors Defenses.
Mm. I like that one.
Fine-tuning motivation in the brain.
Oh yeah, that was.
I mean, my goodness. This is my favorite. The prostate cancer cell that got away.
That was the first title I came up with, and I pitched it, and then everybody loved it, and I was just like, it was like one of those. So you're just like,
it's a great title. Gosh, it was. Yeah. I mean, you got to grab your audience, you know?
Yeah.
I got to know more about this missed connection.
Missed connection. You, a prostate cancer cell riding the L train. Me, a tattooed and pierced CSI investigator.
That makes me so happy that was your title, because it was my favorite.
Thanks.
So we took your plant quiz.
Oh.
And your cancer cell quiz.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, because you made a comment earlier about what petri dish is, and I was like, I'm pretty sure that's from the cancer quiz. But
oh no, I didn't take the cancer quiz. So when I said petri dish, that was all from the gnome. Yeah.
And just for our listeners, they can just search Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory, right? And they'll get,
that's right.
Okay, perfect. So Google that, and you'll get a list of very readable science papers. And every now and then, instead of an article, there's a fun quiz to take. So check it out. Learn some science, people. When's the last time you learned some science?
Do we want to do the quiz for the reader, and then at the
yes.
Do the quiz, and then at the end say what the answers are?
I love that.
Yeah. All right. So let's take one. Well, is that okay?
That's fine with me. Yeah, that sounds fun. I mean, I love my quizzes, so. The more,
yeah. Do you write them?
Yeah, I write all the quizzes. Yeah, both of those quizzes are mine. Yeah.
So this makes sense because you're like the creative guy on the team. You're like the creative scientist. So they're like, come up with the headlines.
No
come
one
up
else
with the
is
quizzes.
Creative on the team. No.
I'm just saying you're the most creative.
Well, they're gonna listen to this and they're gonna be like, you better not say.
Luis, do you have a favorite quiz, or do you have a recommendation?
I like the plant one.
Let's do the plant one.
Okay.
Why don't I read one, and the answers, and then Ellen, you read one of the answers, Luis, and then we'll just alternate. And there's only five questions,
so we'll see
how that works. All right, reader, test your science knowledge. Most plants need sunlight to grow. When neighboring plants start blocking access to sunlight, to what will a plant redirect its resources? Most plants need sunlight to grow. When a neighboring plant starts to block that access to the sunlight, wow, I butchered it the second time. To what will a plant redirect its resources? Attracting animals? Growing taller? Starving neighboring plants?
Ooh, dark.
Hibernating. All right, those
what
are your-
What do you think it is?
What do you think it is?
I hope it's not starving neighboring plants.
Well,
that's very mean.
We'll find out. All right. Ellen, you want to take number two? I think we have to answer it.
We're not going to say what the answer is till the end?
Well, that was what I was thinking, but do you think that's too long?
No, let's just tell them
Let's just tell them now. Okay. Well, first I'll say what we said.
And then I said growing taller.
I said growing taller. Luis, what's the answer?
Growing taller.
Bing, bing, bing!
I knew this because I had a house plant growing up, and it was like in my parents' house, and it was in a dark corner of the house, and it was stretching for dear life to get some freaking sunlight, and it was like its branches, and so I was like, well, if it was stretching, then it's probably growing taller. And also, I'm sorry to that plant.
R.I.P.
Yeah, I actually, for this question, I had originally one of my answers was eat each other, but apparently that was too dark for some people. And I was like, how? That's this is nature. That's the plant to, world.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Resort to plant cannibalism.
Plant eat plant world the out there.
Plant eat plant world. So growing taller is the correct That's answer. Right. Plants in the shade will start putting all their resources into growing taller at the expense of other valuable crop traits such as yield and roots.
It's amazing. All right, question number two. Plants are made of different tissues that need to communicate and coordinate with each other to grow correctly. Which one of the following is used by plant cells to message each other? Is it A, Morse code? Is it B, RNA? C, mitochondria? Or D, tiny bacteria? Can I tell you what my guess was?
What was your guess?
I'm kind of embarrassed because I feel like, so I didn't say Morse code. I said tiny bacteria because I've heard that like bacteria in your gut can communicate. Uh-huh. So I was like, oh, it must be similar to that.
I guessed RNA because I was like, that sounds right.
And guess what?
What's the answer, Lise?
RNA.
Yeah.
I feel like if bacteria was the right answer, you wouldn't have said tiny bacteria. Like you would have just said
bacteria. Jumbo bacteria. Plants use RNA molecules to communicate between tissues. Ba, 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 ba. All right.
Wonderful.
This is actually a really hard question to come up with answers. Because apparently there's so many different ways that plant cells communicate.
Body language.
Pheromones.
I mean, it's actually a fun game. It turned into a fun game looking for answers because we would come up with something and then we were like, okay, let's search it and see if anyone's studying that and found like evidence. And, oh my God. And so I put electricity. And then I would search it, and someone's like has a couple studies on that. And I'm like, oh, okay, I can't use that because it's controversial. Because it's like so it might not.
Science.
All
right.
That's so funny. How don't they communicate?
No, maybe that's a better question.
That's a great question. All right, Lisa, you want to read the third question?
All right, sure. Corn is one of the world's most important crops. It becomes food, feed, and industrial products. But how long has corn been around? Researchers estimate corn's ancestor developed, and then we have 10,000 years ago, 1 million years ago, 1,000 years ago, 500,000 years ago.
So how long has corn been around? So let me walk you through my thought process.
All right, good, yeah.
And then I'll walk you through mine. Go ahead,
Dennis. So I was thinking, well, I mean, corn's been around forever,
yeah.
But I feel like it's not going to be the longest period of time because that's always there to throw unbalance or whatever. I was like, we've been farming for like 30,000 years. I remember hearing that somewhere.
Oh, wow.
That's something I heard. It could be wrong. So I was like, it's got to be more than 30,000 years. So I guessed 500,000 years ago.
So many years.
Yeah.
So this was my thought process. I was like, corn's been around forever. It really was my first thought.
Sure, yeah.
And then I was like 1,000 years ago, come on, eliminate.
Yeah.
And then I was like, 1 million years ago, was the world even around?
The world, as we all know, 6,000 years old. That's the official position of Pursuit Perfectness podcast.
Correct. And then 500,000 also felt like was the world, even, I don't know. It seemed too long, so I went with 10,000. And I was right.
Couldn't even wait for Luis to
yeah, 10,000 years ago.
Yes, I was wrong. I'm bitter about it.
But I really liked your thought process, Dennis, though. It was great. Thank Both you. Of you guys, actually. It's,
it was I'll,
you guys, it's a very academic thought process you guys are, you know, using. Yeah, just analyzing these.
What's interesting about corn is that it's also used with genetics and genetic sequencing, right? I'm seeing that in the answer. So is corn used a lot in experiments as well?
So yeah, so corn is, you know, people, scientists are trying to basically improve corn. They're trying to find genes that they can either amp up or turn down to help them adapt to things like climate change.
Right.
Things like climate change, make them bigger because the world's population is growing, so we need more food.
Right.
And so basically scientists are working on trying to figure out, you know, what genes to push on and off to do
that. Yes. This is very interesting area. Genetically modified foods. Yay or nay? Are we yay?
I mean, I was
Do you have a stance or is
I mean, not? I was trained to be a GMOer.
You're like Ellen, that's literally my job.
I was trained in genetics to
so produce. Pro.
so it's like super pro. Like, I mean, yeah, like super
cool,
pro.
Cool,
yeah.
Cool.
Pro.
Yeah. I'm also pro. I'm fine with it.
Human cloning. Yay or nay? Because we're pro cloning here at the pod.
I mean, if you can clone a version of yourself that could like go to work, and then while you can focus on,
that's all we mean. We just want to clone a version of ourselves to go to work.
What if you woke up one day and you were like, "Oh man, another day of work," and you wake up and there's somebody who looks exactly like you, wearing your clothes, and who's already awake and is looking at you, and is like, "All right, I cloned you so you can go to work for me."
Have you guys seen the TV show Severance on Apple Plus? Because you're literally describing it.
I have not, but I'm going
to.
Yeah,
okay. That sounds good. Pretty good.
You guys need to watch it. It is unbelievable. They don't clone, but they sever their brains, so they think they're a different person when they go to work.
Mm-hmm. All right. Whose turn is it to read this question? I think Ellen's.
Is it my turn? Tomatoes are juicy. Great, great opening line.
Yeah, I'm on
tomatoes
board.
Tomatoes are juicy and sweet members of the nightshade plant family. Which of the following is not part of this family? Is it A, eggplant, B, jalapeno, C, potato, or D, pumpkin?
Tomatoes are juicy and sweet members of the nightshade plant family. Which of the following is not part of this family? Eggplant, jalapeno, potato, pumpkin. Ellen, why don't you walk us through your thought process here?
My thought process was eggplant. Super, too similar to a tomato. They both got that slick skin. They're juicy. It's too much like a tomato. That's definitely part of the family. Jalapeno, also juicy. gonna be part of the family. Now, I was between potato and pumpkin because I'm like, a potato is not juicy, but it is sweet. A pumpkin is not juicy, but it is sweet.
Wait, a potato sweet? Sweet potato.
A potato
sweet.
Sweet
potatoes. Yeah, but.
But like mashed potato, like, ugh.
No, potatoes are not sweet.
It's sweet enough.
You know,
sweeter,
when you mash
a bunch of pumpkin?
Brown sugar in there, you know?
Well, it's like, I don't know. When I eat. I don't know. That's just what I thought of it. There's sugar in it. It's starch and sugar. Anyway.
That makes sense.
And I just said, which of these is so unlike the others? And I thought of a big fat pumpkin. And I'm like, that's so wildly different than these other three. So I went with pumpkin.
I will now walk you through my thought process.
Peter.
All right. So I was like, eggplant. Remember the deadly nightshade family? Everyone knows this. It's a deadly nightshade. Eggplant. Everyone knows this. As for the rest, I had no idea. So I went with the Ellen. I was like, you know, they got a slick skin. So jalapeno is probably part of that, but maybe not. Maybe it's a trick. Mm-hmm. Then it was like potato. Okay, so which ones, like pumpkins don't grow in the ground. They grow on top of the ground.
I didn't even think of how they grow. That's smart.
And I was like, but no, jalapenos.
You're thinking like a scientist.
Yeah, it's
you're thinking like a scientist.
And I was like, but jalapenos grow outside of the ground too, maybe? And then I was like, all right, which ones have seeds? When the potatoes don't have seeds. And then I thought back to Luis saying, everybody gets this one wrong. So I said, I bet everybody's saying potato. I'm going to say pumpkin.
Wow.
And that was my thought process.
And the answer?
It's pumpkin.
Yeah.
Oh, Dennis and I beat the odds.
You guys did. I can't believe it. You're, you're the one.
So what do most people pick? What do most people pick?
So most people, I think, pick potato.
Yeah, so Dennis was right. Yeah,
you were.
But I would have picked potato.
Yeah, you were on the edge.
The people were getting this wrong. I was like, so it can't be the one that everybody's picking.
Pumpkins are gourds, people.
They're gourds.
That's what it says in the answer.
They're gourds.
Second to last question, Luis. You want to read this?
Sure. No, I think this is the last question.
Last one. Okay.
Okay. Here we go. Plants pass down more than genes to their offspring. They also pass down non-gene parts of the genome known as transposons. What do transposons do? A, jump around the genome. B, erase neighboring genes. C, transform into RNA. Or D, become copies of neighboring genes. There's the clone thing again.
Cloning.
Plants pass down more than genes to their
offspring. This one was hard.
They also pass down non-gene parts of the genome known as transposons. What do transposons do? All right, Ellen, you want to walk us through the thought process?
Yes, yes. So I was like, transposons. Let me try to like dive into the Latin root of that word. Is there something I can gain from that word? And I was like, no.
Ellen, I was like, you don't speak Latin.
Well, okay, trans, like to move into, right? So I knew that it could be, but all of these are kind of, no, I guess I should have picked transform into RNA because of that's the only one that also has transform in it. So now I'm rethinking.
But what was your thought process?
My thought process was there's nothing about transposons that tells me anything because I was focused on the posons part, not the trans part, which I'm regretting. Anyways, I thought all of these are equally likely except for jump around the genome, which I thought was ridiculous.
So I will tell you my thought process. I thought, all right, transpose. Well, it's not transform because that's too close of a word.
Oh,
and that's definitely there to trick people who are dumb.
Okay, smart. Oh, like me. Thanks.
This was my thought process. I had no idea. Yeah. Jump around the genome, clearly an insane answer.
That's what I thought too. That's what I thought too.
Erase neighboring genes sounded aggressive. So I said, become copies of neighboring genes. That sounds right.
Yeah.
Transposons.
That's
That's definitely what it is.
Yeah.
So Luis, and do you want to tell us what it was?
It's the crazy jump around the genome.
What?
Isn't that insane? They jump.
Transposons jump around the genome and can wreak havoc if they land in the wrong spot. One of the ways plants keep transposons, otherwise known as jumping genes, grounded is by surrounding them with chemical modifications. Wow.
Amazing. Who would have known? Science is wild and fun, people. You got to check out this website.
You got to check out this website. Science.com? No. CSHL.edu, Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory. Well,
take a quiz, read an article.
I said, I pitched to Ellen that you should write an article that was somehow a science-based witch lady from Sex and the City, are you?
Yes, because we were saying, we were like, these are almost like BuzzFeed quizzes.
Yeah.
Like, they're so fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
This is what I heard. I heard a science witch... A science witch Sex and the City quiz. Is that what I got?
No, I don't think that's what I said.
No, which
close.
One? Did you say which?
Which Sex and the City lady are you? Science-y time. I don't know. Listen,
okay.
I'm just giving,
which part?
I'm trying to give you just inspiration. No, just not. I don't know what the science part of it is. I just know that the part of that somehow it's Sex in the City.
Which part of the cell is most like Miranda?
Yeah.
Which part of the cell is most like Samantha?
There you go. That's
okay.
It. That's it.
Okay. That's okay. It. I got it. I mean, I haven't actually watched Sex and the City, but I'll watch it and then I'll get back to you.
The Samantha part would be like a free spirit. It doesn't follow the rules, so maybe it'd be those.
It'd be those, the jumping.
Yeah, the transposon, exactly, because they just wreak havoc and do whatever they want to jump around. Oh my God, we should all collaborate.
We should make this happen.
Yeah.
And then then pitch it to BuzzFeed.
Oh my God.
This was so fun. Lise, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I had a blast. You guys are hilarious. And thanks for indulging my nerdy, science-y, geeky
side. It was fun.
We love science here on the pod.
We love science on the pod.
The Earth is flat and 6,000 years old.
Climate change is a hoax.
And Lise created the novel coronavirus in a lab. All right.
That's what we took away.
None of that is true.
So where, folks, where can you find Lise on the internet? That website that we just talked about, for starters, Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory. Also on Twitter, at Lise, E-N-R, Sandoval. And also on LinkedIn. So check out those places. And then, Luis, anything you want to plug?
Yeah, the only thing I want to plug is that my improv class just made a team. So it's my first improv team in New York City.
Woo!
Amazing. Woo-hoo!
And I'm pretty excited.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, and we're starting to do shows. We did our first show Sunday at Magnet.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was great. But yeah, it was fun. It's lots of fun. And so we're called Loose Corn.
Amazing. Is that a nod to your science?
No, but kind of, maybe.
Maybe subconsciously. Yeah,
but what was really fun about it was that we have an awesome theme song that two of our team members wrote and sang.
Whoa.
Yeah, amazing. Are you jamming on the piano on that?
No, but remix? I'm jamming on stage. Yeah. Maybe, yeah. Could do a remix. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the theme song itself is worth the
price of admission.
So, yeah. But anyways, yeah. So we'll be doing shows. We're starting to do shows around town. So keep an eye out for Loose Corn, and come support us. both Loose Corn and the team Loose Corn. Very important. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So, amazing.
Well, we will be looking for that team, and we'll be following your career avidly. With avarice. With greed in our hearts. Well, that's it for this week. Follow us on Instagram at Pursuit of Perfectness. We post stuff on there all the time. We're real good at Instagram. And by we, I mean Ellen. Write us an email at Pursuit of Perfectness.
Social media manager.
Write us an email at pursuitofperfectness@gmail.com. Or don't. We don't care. If you like what you heard, rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, tell your friends. Thank you to Keith Burgund for our theme music. Thank you, Keith. I just saw you this past weekend. What a lovely man. Well, until next time, be a little more soft and kind to yourself. Bye.
Bye.